but it like dug into like my forehead, so it's like I have a cut up there.
We can. Are you?
And we had to cut it.
Focus. Oh. Focus.
Oh, I'm talking over the mic.
Focus.
You're live, buddy.
Hello, and welcome to PC Gamer Podcast, episode number 205 for Wednesday, December 23rd. As we're all wrapping up our last-minute Christmas shopping, we're happy to offer you the finest breakdown available of the some incredible world-ending deals taking place on your favorite digital retailers, Steam, GOG, Impulse, and Direct2Drive. So as we wrap those up, we're also going to be talking about our favorite gaming moments of the year and give a little shout-out to every individual game that released this year that we can remember. I'm your host, Evan Lottie, PC Gamer's Associate Editor, and I'm joined by Dan Stapleton.
Hi, everybody.
Secret Magazine. Hello, Dan.
Sorry.
It's a little late in the day here, so we've lost a bit of our edge, I'm afraid, but we'll get it back. We've also got our capable intern crew, Prentice Getty and Eric Belsauce. How you doing, guys?
Hello.
Doing good.
What cookies did you guys get today? Or pastries?
Cookies?
Oh, cookies? Yeah. I got black and white cookies from Specialties. They're delicious.
Chocolate chip.
Good choice. Got peanut butter. Andy Bauman, you're here with us as well. Merry Christmas, etc.
Thanks, yeah. Merry Christmas is the day before. But I didn't get any specialties, so it's not so merry for me.
So I'm told that Specialties is a sandwich dealer near our office. It's really, really excellent. I think they have them up there.
I've heard about it on the OXM show, believe
is that
me.
So?
Yes.
Fantastic.
It sounded delicious over the microphone, but...
I just as a side note, I heard you co-hosting. Good job.
Oh, I'm doing is drinking a crap load of Mountain Dew.
And it's hard work.
Words are just spewing out of my mouth. And
you're not drinking,
what the hell I'm saying.
You're not drinking eggnog?
No, because for OXM, Ryan is alone now because Dan is all at Activision. And so
he
instead of just having him go by himself for an hour... I just fill in some gaps really fast.
Very good. All right, so let's get right to it. So Steam announced their holiday sale yesterday, and I've got to say there's some spectacular stuff. I was talking about it with some people on our TF2 server last night, and we were kind of making the joke like, who says PC gaming is expensive? You know, and just the amazing deals we've seen on Steam and Direct2Drive and other places this year have been better than any other, at least that I can remember.
Yeah.
So I asked you guys to sort of pick out what your favorite deals today are to maybe encourage some last-minute shopping for our listeners. And what'd you come up with?
Defense Grid is my number one on that list. I mean, $250 for Defense Grid. That was a brilliant little tower defense game. It's well worth $250. You buy that for yourself and buy a few for your friends at that price.
Yeah, I mean, on Steam, it's a nice feature. I'm not... positive. I mean, I guess it would work through Direct2Drive and the other services, but you can gift things to other people. You can sort of build up copies of a certain game. I know a lot of people did this when TF2 was like $2 or something as well, and just distribute them to your friends or sort of hoard digital copies to yourselves. I would like to, we weren't really a big fan of Dragon Rising in review. I think it came in around 72 or so, if I'm correct, but it's worth picking up for $20, which is 50% off. Within 2 months of release, that's pretty good on Steam there.
I like the Mirror's Edge for $5. That seems like a really, really, really good deal.
Yeah, I got that one.
I don't know what it was going for, but $5 is really cheap for a good game.
Yeah, I think that one's $20 on a normal day.
Yeah, that's excellent then. And GTA 4 for $8? Did I read that right?
$7.50, yeah.
Holy crap.
Well, my absolute favorite game of all time, Free Space 2. It's up on GOG.com. $3.89.
What a ripoff.
Dude, you get Stalker for $2 right now, today. This is all, keep in mind, the ones I'm saying are only today. I don't know what they're going to be tomorrow. So
right, yeah, a lot of these deals are you know, one a day or a bunch, you know, a set per day.
Yeah.
Direct to Drive is doing one game per day. Steam is doing like four or five per day. Impulse is also doing some daily deals.
Impulse is the only one called Impulse, but they're all doing Impulse buys.
Impulse is actually doing something a little bit different, where if you've got the Impulse application running in your system tray, it will pop up and say like 90% off to Galactic Civilizations 2 today. So that's kind of a more obtrusive, but also, you know, kind of exciting for it to pop up and say, you know, act now, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, you actually get a good deal out of it. So as long as they're not doing, you know, 10% off kind of deals with it, it might be worth it.
Yeah, Direct to Drive right now is at least for the next 17 hours as of this recording, Torchlight for $10, which Steam actually had a few days ago last week.
It's $10 on Steam right now as well.
Oh, okay. In that case, either way. And they're actually sort of teasing their next offer, which appears to be Dragon Age. There's a dragon and it's breathing fire in that little Christmas ornament. And I don't know, I would guess that they might discount it to, I don't know, $45 or something. I'm just throwing a number out there. We'll see.
Yeah, if you could get Dragon Age for $40 right now, that would be a pretty good deal. I mean, there were a few places where you could get it for $40 right around launch, but you know, it's nice to see a big recently launched game like that getting a sale, as well as games that are 2 or 3 years old or more getting, you know, marked down to ridiculously low prices.
Absolutely. I mean, with these, how low these prices are, like, especially for GOG, where they have, you know, so many of these offers available at, you know, under $7 or $4. This is something I sort of suggested a while ago, but, you know, why doesn't one of these digital retailers just have a button that kind of like has you randomly buy a game? Because it's $4 or $5 or, you know, $3 or $4, like, just that opportunity for discovery, that's something that I would like to see. I don't know.
Like the Google button? The let's
yeah.
Be lucky?
I'm feeling lucky.
Yeah.
I'm feeling lucky.
Maybe I don't value my money as much as other people, but.
Well, I mean, you do run the risk of getting burned on something like that, because most of these services do have some games on there that nobody would ever want. I mean, what if you ended up with, you know, Nancy Drew?
Hey.
I can't say nobody would ever want Nancy Drew, because for some reason they keep selling a bunch of those games, but so somebody wants them. But I would be kind of pissed off if it's like, you know, there's a random button and you either get like Fallout or Nancy Drew and you end up with Nancy Drew.
All right, fair enough.
But there, you know, that's not to poo-poo your idea. That would be, you know, there is a sense of danger in that. I mean, what are the highs without the lows?
I love danger and money. In combination, that's my favorite kind. All right, so we'd certainly encourage you guys to check out those sales. Feel free to share some stuff in the comments for people if you find any special deals on other retailers like Amazon. I haven't really been checking those myself, just because I like things digitally myself these days. But we'll try and keep you guys abreast of that over the holidays. If anything extreme comes up, we'll share it with you in the comments. There's really only a few bits of news. A lot of the publishers and developers have already moved on vacation, or they're winding their projects down before Christmas break. But in addition, we were talking about the Soldier and demo update to TF2 last week, and Valve announced that they're adding bots to TF2. Actually, they sort of already have in a beta form to the King of the Hill maps. So again, they're adding, you know, AI controlled bots to TF2, a multiplayer game that's been out for, all, you know, 3 years now, I guess. Almost 3 years.
Give or take.
Yeah.
Give or take. That's, I mean, the first thing I said to Dan was, you know, after we read this press release was, I mean, they've arguably already captured 85% or so of the people that are ever going to buy the game have already bought it, I'd like to think. You know, why roll out such a significant feature now? It seems like a lot of work.
Well, I mean, I would think that I'm actually kind of surprised that if they ever plan to do this, they did wait as long as they did. But I think it is a major feature that will rope in a lot more people, especially this late in the game, because right now there's a lot of fear, and I suspect they did some polls of people who haven't bought TF2 yet and why not. There's a lot of fear for a new player to jump into a game with a community as strong as Team Fortress 2's, because you know that all these people have been playing for 2 or 3 years, and they're two or three years of experience is going to absolutely shame you when you jump into a game. So even if the game is like, you know, 250, you know, some people are going to say, is it worth $2.50 of my money and, you know, an hour or two of my time to jump into this game and just get my ass handed to me? So for a lot of people who aren't competitive, like, you know, really hyper competitive multiplayer players, to get a good amount of enjoyment out of this game, this feature, I think, will be a big selling point.
And after you said that, like, that's kind of what your response was the other day. And I would kind of agree with that, because I think, like, naturally as hardcore gamers, as people that listen to podcasts, as people that play a lot of multiplayer games, you kind of think of the people that play TF2 as this narrow, group of people that, you know, understand all the game mechanics and like identify with a class and understand who Valve is and what they do. But it's a lot more broad than we think, you know, and sometimes we lose sight of that. And especially with all the items and like the crafting system and the things that they've introduced in the game, like, how can you expect a new player to, you know, to jump into TF2 and know what all the spies' watches do and know how to counter them and all these like layered sets of mechanics have evolved over years, literally. So it's a fantastic thing. And they said that it's sort of a result of some of their work with Left 4 Dead, of course, like the pathfinding, the AI system there. And the most interesting thing that I read that they mentioned was their bots don't use sort of like an omniscient understanding of the environment. Like, they don't have access to knowledge that players don't, but they use what they're calling virtual key presses. So somehow they're simulating that, you know, line of sight and things like that. And that, I guess, if you're thinking about like an AI bot hitting WASD and you know, spacebar and things like that, it's just kind of a cool concept to me that I've never heard before. I'm sure it's been implemented in the past, but I just like the idea of that.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest thing a bot can do is headshot you every time, because all they have to do is punch in some numbers. And
exactly.
They know so exactly where you are.
They have to actually make it less accurate, and that's how it's refined and more realistic, I guess.
Yeah. Do you think that, like, players, though, because I love playing by myself, I'm not a huge multiplayer gamer, but there's so much that goes on in a TF2 match that I think is, like, you learn over time because you're playing with people, that I don't know if you'd learn if you play with bots. Just, like, some certain etiquettes and stuff. I mean, it'd be good to be a sniper trainer, the bots, mm-hmm. but, I mean, other than that...
Well, and it's definitely not going to be the same experience as playing against people. You're never going to get that with a bot until Hal comes along. But, I mean, it's still going to be, you know, a sampling of the experience. You're going to get the basics. You'll get a feel for it, and then you can jump online and not be totally over your head. And you'll still, you know, don't get me wrong, you'll still get your butt kicked, but not nearly as severely as you would had you just jumped in cold.
Probably. I hope these are some sassy bots, like most games.
I mean, it is a valuable thing. Like, I think about the reason that I go into CS Source these days, and I only play against bots. I find a server with bots when I play CS Source, and it's a relaxing experience to me because I'm not playing against, you know, completely experienced, incredibly skilled players. I can just kind of relax, use the weapons I want without being criticized for AWPing and things like that, you know. It'll be curious to see how the community deals with it.
I hope that Valve develops technology where the bots will bitch at you for doing things wrong.
Dude,
and call
bots,
you noob.
Bots always have the best taunts, though. It's always been the case.
Yeah, but they need to be obnoxious, like player taunts, so that it's criticizing you for being a noob, and, you know, not working. We're not doing exactly what they want you to. That would really simulate the experience of playing online.
Why are you blocking the door?
Exactly.
Get out of my way. Yeah, there is a lot of that. All right, so moving on to one of our other news bits. So I don't know if you guys have played SiriusXM HD. Came out last month.
Mm-hmm. I have not.
The first encounter. It's a remake of the original SiriusXM in HD, of course. But Crow Team, the folks over in Croatia, if I'm not incorrect, have reassured us that a original entry, SiriusXM 3, is still on track for 2010. We're going to see that next year. And, I don't know what our thoughts are on that. I played HD and it was okay. It was very frantic, and it's like 16 player co-op, I think, in some situations. And I mean, fighting against like these giant enemies with Duke Nukem style weapons. But the one thing the game was lacking was just any animations for their enemies. Like most of the enemies just kind of like slid across the environment without really articulating or moving. It was kind of strange, but it's, I think I've said this before, like, in the absence of Duke Nukem and No One Lives Forever, I really want more humor in my shooters. Like, I welcome that in any form, whether it's a smaller game or a larger game, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, Serious Sam and Painkiller are those shooters that are just pure shooters. They just give you ridiculous guns and throw tons of enemies at you, and you just go have fun.
Although I guess the new Painkiller Resurrection didn't fare too well in review. So there are a lot of factors to that formula. It's not just, you know, throw enemies in there and throw you in there with a gun.
Some side boob in the cutscenes, you know.
That always helps. But you know, there's pacing to consider. There's, you know, how strong to make the enemies. You don't want to overdo it. You don't want to underdo it. It is a, you know, there is a bit of a science to it. Just to make it a satisfying experience without being frustrating or without being too easy.
Yeah, that's true. I think most of those games kind of try and just stay true like to what the formula was in, I guess, like 2002 or 1998 or whatever with games like Quake and UT. But yeah, there is some nuance that tends to miss. For a big segment on the podcast, because this is likely our last podcast of the year. Well, it has to be, right? We're going to be out of the office next week.
Yeah, I'm not coming in next week, are you?
I hope not. I need some time off. But to sort of illustrate how quickly this year has gone by for me in terms of gaming, I want to go through a chronological list, or as chronological as possible, of all the games of notes that came out this year. I'm not sure what the determining factor for a game of note is, but I just wrote down some game titles.
It's whether or not you note it.
Pretty much, yeah. And I just want to ask you guys to share any kind of memory or, you know, whether or not it was disappointing or what we loved about it, or kind of encapsulate the time we spent in that game for the brief period we played it. Keep it as brief as possible. For a segment's sake, we're going to call this the Oh My God, That Was This Year Awards, sponsored by Corsair Memory. But not actually sponsored by Corsair. The first game I can remember coming out this year that I played after Christmas was Fear 2. And that was one of our first covers. And I remember being very disappointed by the guns in that game, that they lacked any semblance of kick, and a flamethrower was like, it was like one of the worst flamethrowers I've ever shot in a game. I think you'll echo that, Dan. You did the review.
Yeah, I mean, I found the whole thing fairly mediocre. And the plot especially was a bit of a letdown. The weapons just weren't nearly as satisfying as the first game was. And, you know, it looked okay. It had some good creepy elements. I'd say the best parts of it were the ones that weren't really interactive. And it was like walking through a haunted house. Because beyond that, the enemies weren't really that great. And, it was just kind of mediocre. Like the mech scene, looked very cool, but just wasn't very fun to play. It was like a walking turret.
Agreed. All right. Next game. Empire Total War.
Didn't play it until way later.
It was good.
But I liked hearing about
the naval battles are hard.
I liked hearing about all the goodness that people got out of it. And then when I played it later, it was still okay. It was still a lot of fun.
Just okay, though. Didn't blow you out of the water.
That's right.
Unintended.
Unintended. Okay, that was intended.
There's some pretty crippling bugs at launch. Is that fair to say?
I mean, not for everybody. I mean, there's always going to be some stuff that some people run into, but not everybody was, you know, had a problem. It was significant, but it wasn't like the game was unplayable. Mm-hmm. And it has improved a great deal from what I've heard. And, you know, for me, that's actually one that, and most of the Total War series as a whole, in fact, that's like such a big game and like something that I haven't really gotten into, that it's like something I really want to spend a bunch of time on. I just don't have enough time to throw at it I don't have the time to throw at it that I think it deserves. Mm-hmm. And therefore I keep putting it off. Mm-hmm. So I've barely spent much time in them.
Yeah. I think it's a case of also, I think I'm doing this wrong. Like, I think I'm doing it wrong the whole time. Like, I don't know if I'm doing the right tactics, setting the right units in the right spots with, you know, proper alignments and formations. Like, I have no idea if I'm doing this correctly, and most of the time, I'm probably not.
That doesn't have advisors that pop up and say you're doing it wrong?
Yeah, dude. Gosh, Andy, French freighters would never take that Delta formation en route to Italy.
Yeah, but ever. Kind of, but not really. Like,
it's in summation for me, it's impressive but overwhelming.
Yeah. If you're European, then you loved it. However, that's the impression we got.
That seems to be the reviewers.
Yes. All right, next game. Another strategy game, Warhammer 40,000 Dawn of War 2.
So good.
That one is a lot of fun. Have you guys spent much of the time in just the plain multiplayer aspect of it?
That's the mode I utilize least.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I really enjoy the kind of action RPG angle of it. The single player campaign where you're collecting loot. And especially since they patched it to reduce the number of filler missions you had to do. It really, fixed the pace a bit, and, all the special abilities working together, the co-op in that is a lot of fun. I really wish they allowed you to have four player co-op in the campaign though, because they only let you have two.
Yeah. That would have been a nice addition. I think for the multiplayer's sake, I tend to just really stay away from capture point based multiplayer in RTS games. I don't know why. It just seems like a mechanic that doesn't appeal to me. It seems too challenging. It forces me into situations that I don't want to utilize my units in.
Where you like two guys go and take a flag?
Yeah, I mean, it's based on speed and like accumulating points, and I just want to have the feeling of having a cool base or things like that. But anyway, the Last Stand, which we loved universally throughout the office, was a survival mode that they released for free in October, I believe. And that was fantastic because that was like a three-player co-op mode.
Yeah, it's really addictive. It's survival mode. They send wave after wave after you, and you just try and stay alive as long as possible. And you do have to hold on to some capture points in that in order to boost your score.
And I know this is in 2010, but they are adding a Tyranid and a Chaos Marine to that.
Yes, with the Chaos Rising expansion.
So that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, indeed. All right, cool. So we like that. Next game, Demigod.
We played the hell out of that.
Oh my goodness. I mean, what was the span of time you think we played that? We probably played it every night for at least a month and a half.
At least.
Yeah. I mean, solid every night. Four games every night.
That could well be like my most played game of the year.
That's significant. So we of course remember the matchmaking issues, the peer-to-peer system they had in place. Wasn't really successful, fair to say. Most of the time, if you're trying to get a game with more than six or seven people, it wouldn't work at all. I'm trying to remember what that was like, but then they sort of patched it to include proxy network matchmaking.
Yeah, I mean, at launch, it was a huge mess. For the first 2 to 3 weeks, it was really hard to get a good multiplayer game going. You'd have people just in the lobby stage. You would see, oh, these two people aren't connecting. One of them has to drop. Both of them have to drop, reconnect. It seemed to matter which order you connected in. It was just a huge mess. But to their credit, they totally revamped the system, and it works beautifully now. We played the hell out of it. Actually, we need to get back into that game, Evan, because they put out a new Demigod that we haven't taken for a test drive yet.
Yeah, we haven't touched him yet. I almost feel like it's a little too late for that game. I mean, I sincerely hope a lot of people still play it. I haven't checked because it's a fantastic game still, but by the time they rooted out the issues, I think a lot of people have left it behind, but I hope that's not the case. I'm speculating.
Well, according to some statistics that Stardock put out, they did allow people to return it for a refund. But apparently 80 to 90% of the people that returned it for a refund then went and rebought it, and bought it back after the issues were solved. But the word of mouth on the connectivity issues, I'm sure, took a big chunk out of its success.
Indeed. All right. Let's keep our pace moving here. Defense Grid.
Awesome. Really addictive.
That game was.
The narrator made that game for me.
Yeah, that was the layer of presentation that the performance of that voice actor, who is like a disembodied former player kind of guy, like commander of the mm-hmm. tower defenses. It was just so subtle and funny and just really well done.
Absolutely. All right, another game in the same genre that we loved about as equally, I think. Plants vs. Zombies.
I mean, it's not exactly a tower defense game in the traditional sense. It was a unique take on it, which, made it feel different. And even after playing Defense Grid, you still find all kinds of new stuff in Plants vs. Zombies. Personally, I think I like Defense Grid better. I do like the humor in Plants vs. Zombies, but I think for me, the gameplay in Defense Grid was more rewarding.
Certainly. I think for PopCap, they're almost, with Plants vs. Zombies, they're almost manufacturing less of a game and just, they're just manufacturing charm, like the color of those characters and the neighbor that comes in to give you suggestions and sells you things out of his truck. And I don't know.
The song at the end is priceless.
That too. All right. I sort of lumped all these into the same category, and even though they came out over time, the Fallout 3 DLC.
Yeah, I mean, those were very hit and miss, I think. Broken Steel is essential. If you don't have that, buying that extends pretty much doubles the life of a Fallout 3 character. It raises the level cap from 20 to 30, adds a bunch of new quests, that happen after, the ending of the vanilla game. That one, any Fallout 3 fan should definitely pick up. I mean, it does get unbalanced when you hit level 25 or so. I mean, you're just walking through and headshotting everything, but you're still getting to keep playing that character, which a lot of people really want to do. The others, the pit was pretty good. It was more Fallout. It was more of the same kind of quest, gameplay that Fallout really perfected, or not perfected, but had a lot of, and people want more of. So that was good. The other two were kind of on rails. There was Operation Anchorage and Mothership Zeta, kind of on rails shooters that, it just wasn't what Fallout really was about. And the shooting is actually kind of the weakest part of Fallout as compared to the role playing aspect. So, and it's okay, but it's not great.
Oh. I adore Braid.
Use your words.
Yes, not just noises.
Braid, I don't want to say too much, but Braid changes the way you think about gaming. Like,
are you sure? I mean, that's I haven't played it, and that's a huge statement. I mean,
I know it's a huge statement, but
it's a statement I'm so ready to just kind of shovel under the, or brush under the rug of pretension.
I know it sounds pretentious and press, or not press, but a press release, but upon finishing that game, I literally, for an hour, I just sat and thought about it. It's worth, I mean, it's $5 on Steam right now, I think, and you have to end it.
So how high were you?
Yeah. There was zero drugs involved, Dan.
I don't believe you.
My thoughts about Braid are, yeah, he's kind of right. everybody who had hype about Braid, yeah, they're pretty much right. It's a great game.
It really is.
Okay, so one of the bullet points is introspection. We've got that much down.
I've played about the first third of it, and the puzzles are mind blowing in the same way that the Portals puzzles are mind blowing. It's stuff that you haven't. It really takes some effort to wrap your mind around it, and then it just kind of opens up to you the possibilities, which is a really cool thing. I haven't finished it though, and Eric says the ending is the best part, so I'll have to get to that eventually.
Yeah, it's okay. Worth checking out.
All right, another indie game we loved, Xenoclash.
Weird game, but fun.
Punching toucan men in the face, hitting elephant men with giant hammers,
trout guns.
Trout guns, squirrel bombs dropped via parachute. What else?
That's what it's all about.
Really, really trippy voice acting. You know that game actually, now that you mentioned it, had one of the best first-person brawling systems I've ever seen in a game.
And I think what lent itself a lot to that was the Source Engine physics, right? I mean, if you play Counter-Strike Source, you have an idea of the awesome ragdoll in that game. And it's even better when you're putting actual physical force and seeing it in motion into these enemies, knocking them against boxes and each other. And it's really delightful, especially that arena mode. I forget the name of it, where you're, tackling all these enemies at once and throwing bombs. And very good game. I'm glad to hear they're making a sequel.
Fish guns.
Yeah.
Fish guns. All right.
Fish guns.
I'm going to lump these in the same category, Battlefield Heroes and Quake Live.
I haven't really spent any time in either of those.
Well, I don't think they're necessarily in the same category, because Quake Live, is there any microtransactions at all? It's pretty much just Quake 3 for free, isn't it?
I don't think so, but they're both browser guided experiences and they're free to play.
That is
off existing franchises. That's my basis. But
like, I had a lot of fun in Quake Live. It's basically Quake 3 for free. Battlefield Heroes was interesting, but it didn't have lasting appeal for me because I wasn't spending money on it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's supposed to grab you into that is the microtransactions or earning things anyway. I had no desire to buy anything in there.
Yeah, I kind of lump them both into interesting experiments by established publishers, and I'm not sure if we declare them unsuccessful. I don't think we can at this point, but
I think EA kind of has declared Battlefield Heroes unsuccessful in the form in which it launched, because they have done some radical revamping to the pricing structure that basically really encourages buying stuff, like really twist your arm. If you want, you like actually earning anything apparently takes a really long time now. And like the existing player base was really pissed off about that. But, I mean, it's still free. You can still go and play for free, but the paying people now have a competitive advantage.
What a shame. Killing Floor. Am I the only one that played that?
No, I played it on the free weekend.
And?
It was fun. We had a weekend for it. We had a game night.
And?
it's very tense. The barricading aspect of it is definitely original and interesting.
Yeah, so how that works is every character has a welder, and you can weld doors, and they basically gain armor, like a percentage of armor that degrades, and you can, weld doors back that are, losing their armor. So you can sort of block entrances, and it's an entirely wave-based game, right? It's multiplayer co-op with, I think, up to 6 players.
I think 8.
Yeah, 6 or 8, and you have like persistent character classes that you level up over time. So that's kind of cool. Lots of like interesting elements. Kind of an ugly game though. Running on Unreal 2.5 tech, fair to say. But a nice entry, and I think a surprisingly successful one for the developer Tripwire, who's also making the next Red Orchestra 2.
Now, is it an ugly game, or is it just dated looking? Because I mean, to me, those are kind of different things.
Well, it's very industrial, and there's a lot of blood, and
it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think they did almost the best they could with the tools they had in front of them, but there's a lot of really like thick visual filters on some of the areas and like some of the graphics. That just kind of like make things look extremely film grainy and like it's not very subtle.
So kind of overdone?
Yeah, a little bit. But that's, again, it's kind of the spirit of the game. It's this like horror movie nonsense. Yeah. Anyway, okay. X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Played the demo.
What did you think of the demo?
I thought, well, I get it, but I'm not going to buy it and play the whole thing.
I did play the whole thing and I enjoyed it for the most part. The combat system was a lot of fun. The plot, which, had to adhere to the movie, was awful. just really, really awful. And it adhered to the movie and it didn't adhere to the movie because, a game has to stretch it out. But the fighting was pretty cool. I mean, it did have like a problem with repetitive mini bosses, which I guess Batman Arkham Asylum also had. So I can't really hold that too much against it. But the fighting was very satisfying. It was bloody. It was how Wolverine should fight.
I think my only memory is of looking over my shoulder on your screen, Dan, and seeing you, basically gut a helicopter with Wolverine's claws, and thinking to myself, that's all I need to get out of this game. Like you've accomplished, like, just in that moment. I don't need to play like 5 or 6 hours or however long it took to beat. I got what I needed, and that was enjoyable. Ghostbusters.
I didn't play Ghostbusters.
Me neither. I heard the game.
Honestly, I got through the first like the tutorial and like, I think I'm gonna go play something else. Mm. It did not grab me, and the voice acting in that was painful in the tutorial. It was they just all really sounded really bored, And for a game where the voice cast is such a big selling point, to have not very good voice acting is not a good sign. And yeah, I had heard the same things about trapping ghosts being kind of tiresome. But I don't know. It's maybe something I'll get back to someday. And I say that about a lot of things I never get back to.
Street Fighter 4.
Yes.
That was fun. I was a Street Fighter fan back in the day. You know, when it was on Super Nintendo, I played a lot of that. My favorite fighting game was Street Fighter II. So I enjoyed slipping back into that, even though it's not a PC game by nature.
Yeah, but it was so beautiful. I mean, we put it on our 30-inch monitor here, and I was just so impressed with the way the backgrounds were lit and the animation, and really a lot of care and attention went into that game, and just as much attention into the port itself on the PC. We were all very impressed with that, and Resident Evil 5 as well. So Capcom, well done on porting games.
Yeah, pulling off Ultras and having the anime-style craziness never felt so good.
Although, you know, I can still never pull off the super-duper moves. Makes me sad.
Oh, dude, you got to find a character that has a semi-easy one and just go for them. So satisfying.
All right, I wrote this one down because I think Dan has something interesting to say about it. Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
By interesting, do you mean hateful and spiteful?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was not a good game. I mean, I'm a fan of the old cartoons. I grew up with them, and then like the movies are to me an abomination unto Optimus Prime. But I mean, the game, like, you know, separating it from the awful, awful movies. It just was a really basic, pew, pew, pew shooter. The transformation stuff was, I mean, you have to hold down a button in order to stay in car form. The animations were cool of the transformation, but the action was just dull.
Megan Fox.
She was in it for like 2 minutes.
Megan Fox.
Best performance.
I guess that gets her a VGA.
Wow, that's sad. Yeah, that's really sad, considering the Dragon Age characters. Okay, anyway. So I'd encourage you guys to not let me run away with this one. Arma 2.
That is Mike.
I think you have more to say about it than any of us.
Yeah, but I want to encourage other points before I blow my load.
I'm going to set this one out because A, I didn't play very much of it, and B, you just said what you just said. So
you start, and I'll chime in.
Okay. Well, I mean, one of the most like singular joys in gaming for the entire year that I've had is just flying in a helicopter with three or four people. We're all linked over Ventrilo. We're all talking. We're going to whatever objective. We have to destroy something. We have to rescue something. And we're just flying over this, you know, section of, you know, fictional, but sort of accurate representation of the Czech Republic. And there's forests and it's just open terrain. There's like a few cities. And we just get hit by a missile. Like, we have no idea where it came from. And we lose, like, our rear rotor, so our pilot can't turn properly. And we just have to make that snap decision, like, as a group, like, oh, shit. Like, we need to eject. So we're yelling eject over the mic, right? And, I mean, this just happened, like, so many times. Because Arma is a game that doesn't have scripted AI and things just kind of, I mean, the AI kind of cheats, frankly, just the way it's designed. But just those moments of, like, actual contextual drama, and you're yelling out eject, 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 like semi-ironically, and it's just like just that thrill of taxiing people in a helicopter in a vehicle somewhere, and it's a complete representation of what it's like to play Army as a kid. I mean, for me, in co-op with a handful of guys, that's really, and maybe that is or isn't what the game's designed to be, but it's a fantastic thing, even if it only runs at 25 frames half the freaking time.
So wait a minute. When you were playing Army as a kid, you were imagining invading the Czech Republic?
Absolutely.
Who was it?
Yeah, come on. But it's just...
As a simulation, it seems fantastic. As a game, getting hit by a rocket when you had no way of seeing it coming, to me, is frustrating.
It is, but it's... I mean, if you're... I know this is like such a narrow, like, specific thing, and not everybody experiences the game this way, and the campaign is kind of buggy and difficult, but you know, in co-op and with a small group of people, it's such a fantastic thing, because you're just buying into this slower paced experience where you're calling out objectives and you're planning things together, you're looking at maps, you're you know, calling out orientations and formations and things like that, you're getting your gear together. It's just such a refreshing thing against things like Team Fortress 2 and then Call of Duty that are so blindingly fast-paced.
That's true. It is an excellent contrast.
Well, I will say you have to put a lot into it to get anything out of it. and there's a steep learning curve, but I think it pays off, and it's completely unique like that, and worth it, in my opinion.
I remember one of the missions we played most was this, you have to ambush a convoy, and you
sort insurgent of, surprise.
Yeah, insurgent surprise, and you're on this road that runs along a coast, and you have to plant bombs, and you sort of hide in the woods, but there's like so little cover, and you have to wait for this long convoy of tanks and APCs and transport vehicles, and you have to just get it exactly right with your placement of mines and C4 and things like that, and your rockets. And man, we must have played that like 20 times in a row trying to get it right. The Monkey Island releases Tales and Secret of Monkey Island.
Great game. Great fun for the whole family, I would say.
Happy that they are out and that they're amazing. Fulfilling games. Yes.
I mean, I won't say that you know it that they have blown me away or had me in stitches, you know, laughing out loud every 5 minutes or anything, but it is a very consistently entertaining game, and the characters are very well realized. It's an attractive art style. Well, some people don't like it, but I enjoy it. And you know, it's just a well done game with a good story.
Yeah, I mean, I love just jumping into those worlds and just having some time to just, you know, because I like the adventure style pacing where you can roam around and try out all the different puzzles and figuring your stuff out. And while you're doing that, you don't have to worry about someone else coming in and killing you and ganking you and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's just great. It's a great experience, I think, as a gamer to have.
You do have to worry about LeChuck, though.
Only on the ending.
Wolfenstein.
Awesome guns, sound effects.
I love Wolfenstein.
Made that game amazing.
Yeah. I think technical excellence in terms of the weapons and the kill effects.
Yeah, you know, I'm funny thing about Wolfenstein, I'm actually downloading that off Steam right now.
Oh, nice.
Because that's one of my thing I'm planning to play over the break.
Honestly, like I hate to encourage cheating, and I hate to encourage like a non-canonical or playthrough, but if there's any way to get all the weapons, access to them while you start the game, that'd honestly be a little bit more fun. Because, I mean, some of the best weapons you get late in the game, and you can only use them depending on how much you progressed for a few levels.
But, see, I don't know. Maybe it's just the way I play games, but I enjoyed, like, searching for all the gold and purchasing all the weapons myself, and I thought that was kind of cool.
It made the old Wolfenstein gold search, you know, worth something, because you could go take it in and trade it in for a weapon.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I mean, personally, I like to do it both ways. And the first time through, I like to play, you know, straight up and play it as it was meant to be played. You know, have the experience that the developers wanted me to have. And then I'll go and break it and just go nuts. You know, the second time through. I mean, that's one of my more memorable times of doing that is with Half-Life 2 or Half-Life 1, actually. Because, you know, going through the first time, played it completely straight. And then I would turn on, like all the weapons. And, you know, just go on safari in that opening tram ride. Just pick off the scientists.
Do you have a good frequency response on your
a good what?
Sound system? Do you have a good low frequency response on your sound system?
I don't know.
Like, do you have a lot of bass? Good bass?
I have a subwoofer.
Okay, then don't get a silencer for any of your guns.
Okay.
It's just way more satisfying.
Yeah. Like amazing. Wait,
are we talking about Wolfenstein?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I tried the demo. I didn't really like it.
Hater. You just don't have good enough headphones, I guess.
What did you not like about it, Fantas?
Well, I don't know what part the demo is from in the game, but
it's from the beginning.
Okay. Well, it was so basic. You like grab a machine gun and then a wave of enemies like come out of a clown car like out of nowhere and just like charge at you for no reason.
Yeah.
Just like straight out of like circa, you know, in 1999 with the PlayStation.
You just described all of Modern Warfare 2.
That's what it was like. Yeah. And well, I don't know.
It's also an Activision game, but I mean, the game really picks up, frankly, when you're melting Nazis with a fire hose of plasma. So let's be frank. All right. Next game, Zuma's Revenge.
You know, I actually just finally beat the campaign last night. That's the story mode.
Oh, nice! Like the multiple boss ending.
Yep.
How'd you like that?
It was entertaining. I did get frustrated by a few of the puzzles, like the very high level stuff, just because I was annoyed that the, like, sometimes it was easier than others because it is randomized. But you know, it's really addictive. And that annoyance in no way made me want to stop playing.
That's what PopCap does. Amen. All right. So getting very near to recent gaming releases here, finally, Batman Arkham Asylum.
Oh God. Another really addictive thing. Having the voice actors in there, was an awesome treat. I mean, that's one of those things, like with Ghostbusters, where the voice actors were as big a lure as the game itself. But in this case, they actually delivered. And also the gameplay was awesome. And there were a few rough parts. I mean, following like clouds of burps or whatever, was kind of annoying, but the combat in that game is amazing. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. Just incredibly smooth, plays awesome on a mouse and keyboard. It never devolves into button mashing. It's just so much fun. I spent hours and hours in the challenge modes.
Wow. As a fan, you have been served. If I had to, like encapsulate what the game was to me, it was just like super high quality character assets. Mm-hmm. Like just the definition of those characters and how they represented them, and like the stubble on Batman's face and things like that. Just the amount of detail given to each of the character models was magnificent to me, and that's what made me want to play. Just seeing those characters animate.
The detail in the Joker was amazing.
I think that they had a really slick presentation too, just overall, just the menus, everything, the sound, and mix that with like sort of them guiding you in the right ways almost to just keep the entertainment level super high. No levels of like frustration or being lost at all. And
right. It was extremely polished.
Just made that game a joy to play. Not to mention the setting. I mean, hell yeah.
Yeah, level design was all really good too.
Batman.
Amen.
And there are some, there's a fair point to be made that the boss fights were not all fantastic, but you know, they were good, and they weren't all like straight up boss fights, which, I mean, how much fun would it have been if you just fight everybody?
Borderlands.
Well, that pretty much says it.
I just didn't want to hog all the mic time here.
What I love about Borderlands more than anything is just sheer loot. I know it's obvious, but until Torchlight came along, like how much really loot grinding had you done in a while? And now you can do it in 4-player co-op in a first-person shooter. Me and Josh had a blast playing this game. I think it was a really fun co-op experience, albeit a little broken toward the end. It for me, it was just kind of raw fun of grabbing awesome guns and lighting crazy mutant dogs on fire, you know?
Yeah. And to me, the core gameplay, they absolutely nailed. They got excellent combat and the loot and the, you know, upgrading. The problems were, and the art style was amazing too. I love the art style. But the problems were what they built around it. I mean, the map system was virtually unusable. The menus were a little bit clunky. The ending was awful. The RPG aspects were okay. The NPCs were worthless. The driving was eh, you know, but the core gameplay, really fun.
I think there was a little bit too much Halo in Borderlands for me. I mean, like the low gravity jumping, the way a lot of the shotgun, like the broad firing patterns, a lot of the weapons, the way the rocket launchers behaved, the way the vehicles moved, and
it was very console friendly. That's for certain,
but still fun.
Indeed.
Oh yeah, definitely.
League of Legends.
It's fun.
Only Josh were here to champion his favorite game.
Me and Eric played.
It was nice because my brother is an absolute like Defense of the Ancients fiend, which this game is really a take on, the Warcraft 3 mod Defense of the Ancients. And it was nice because it was like a fresh start. It was like, I could get in and play this Defense of the Ancients style game with some tweaks and some cool aspects that it had of its own. But I wasn't just getting yelled at by the already existing player base, which was probably the biggest aspect for me, is like, I can get in and have fun here. So, me and Josh, we had, and like Max McGee, former intern, we had a lot of fun playing.
And me.
And Prentice. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that guy.
You still get yelled at to people, like, whenever somebody kills you, they have to rub it in.
Well, Prentice, you get yelled at, but that's got nothing to do with the game. Yeah.
That's true.
Champions Online.
Cool character creator.
Yeah. And that's again, you know, what Cryptic does really well is the character creator. The game itself, I mean, I had fun with it for the first, you know, 12 or 15 hours that I was in there. You know, it wasn't the best MMO I ever played, and it was retreading a lot of the same ground as City of Heroes. But, you know, it's entertaining. I did get bored of it a little bit more quickly than other MMOs I've played because I played a lot of Company of Heroes or City of Heroes. And also I found a lot of the stat stuff very confusing.
Yeah, they didn't explain what things did very well.
I mean, they did explain it, but they didn't do it very well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like when you're picking out your loot rewards, you mouse over it and it says, you know, it adds to you know, these stats, and, you know, has some percentages, and it's all in really small type and really kind of dense and difficult for new players to understand. And then like they introduce crafting, and that's pretty dense as well. So there's a lot of layers of stuff on that aren't explained well enough.
Yeah. I remember how genuinely excited I was for the game after we saw it for preview. And, I don't know. It was really disappointing for me, frankly. Like I jumped in, I made an honest effort in an MMO for the first time in years. And, I was having one of my good friends in Georgia play with me named Phil. And, you know, we'd go through quests together. And, you know, by the time we got to the second realm, I was already just bored. Like, I think part of the contributor, and this is maybe more of like a personal criticism than a professional one, was just the travel powers, especially the flight and the super jump travel powers that every character had, kind of made things so incongruent. Because, you know, the travel powers were so travel-y, I don't know how to call it, like what adjective to use there. I mean, they're very effective. Like you're moving over vast spaces. So the zones had to be huge. And, I mean, you could just kind of go wherever you wanted and there were people flying everywhere. And like, I was having like three or four quests at a time, and I don't know. It was pretty overwhelming for me.
So the travel powers made it too easy to get from place to place?
Something like that. I can't put my finger on it. Like, just, it wasn't, it became a completely non-linear game. Like just moving over huge mountains and like, I was almost like, I was gaming the game, you know, a little bit too much, and not just walking into zones and fighting the enemies and then proceeding to the next area. I was just moving over all this space, and for some reason that was overwhelming to me.
And you do lose perspective of the size of the world. I mean, it stops feeling like a real world when you're essentially warping from place to place.
I think that's it.
And that's kind of a shame in that particular game, because it is a very beautiful world, and with their art style. And you know, a lot of it is pretty well designed too. I mean, there's a lot of detail in a lot of those zones, and to just jump over like a few city blocks at a time, you know, it kind of takes away from that.
Torchlight.
I was addicted to a lot of games this year. that one swallowed up about 30 hours of my life before I knew what hit me.
Yeah. I could definitely I could see in my Steam list, Dan, like initially, like you were sort of like making the small venture into it. Like you're like, okay, what is this Torchlight people are talking about? You know, you're getting some loot, and then like you were just in it 24/7 for like days and days and days.
Well, not days and days and days. Well, yeah. But well, I did spend days and days and days playing it. Yes, but not. I did stop to sleep. I did continue to come into work. I played a lot of that game, and you know, the ending of that one was a bit of a letdown as well, because the final boss was obnoxiously difficult. I mean, it was just not difficult, but durable. I mean,
it's a wall of HP. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just keep throwing, you know, as much damage as you can at him. And it wasn't a very interesting fight for it to go on that long, but everything leading up to that was really addictive. And the crafting, you know, the alchemy stuff and the gambling at the random store guy, and you know, all that stuff, and the robot bard. No, what other game has a robot bard? Oh, and of course the pet. You can't forget the pet.
Yes, I think it was just more than any other game this year. Frankly, it was the right game at the right time for a lot of people that wanted something Diablo-like, wanted something that you could sit down for, you know, whether it was half an hour or 3 hours at a time and get the same, you know, level of enjoyment out of that time.
Yeah, I don't think any game has benefited more from Blizzard announcing that Diablo 3 would come out in 2011.
Absolutely. I mean, you think, I mean, Borderlands, you know, and some of the MMOs we've mentioned, a lot of the other games we've mentioned have accumulation as a core game mechanic, right? Like loot, and otherwise, or character building. But the level of investment in a game like Borderlands, like you have to sit down, you have to find the quest, you have to walk there, you have to, you know, maybe get people to play with. But Torchlight, it benefited for me. I mean, a lot of people ask this question, why isn't it a multiplayer game? Why isn't it a multiplayer game? I didn't want it to be a multiplayer game.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see, you know, a lot of people who are especially Warcraft fans, or sorry, Diablo fans, really like the co-op aspect of that game, the multiplayer. And you know, there are a lot of parts in that game where it would be fun to wade through a dungeon in co-op, but I really had fun in single player as well.
Getting down into the November-December area, Machinarium or Machinarium, I don't know.
I don't think we ever found out.
I like Machinarium. How about that?
Prentice, I know you can contribute.
Yeah.
On this.
Did anyone else play it or was it just me?
I played some. Didn't beat it.
Yeah. I thought it was great. I thought it did a bunch with not a lot. I mean, the narrative was brilliant in my opinion. I'd rarely feel empathy for video game characters and managed to care a lot about the little robot dude and his girlfriend. I thought they definitely were influenced by Pixar and took a lot of pages out of their book, and I think it worked.
I really like the idea of a game that doesn't use language.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there's no words, and it lets the music kind of elevate itself, and the music in that game is fantastic.
Yeah.
But just, I loved sort of going frame by frame to the illustrations and just seeing the art more than anything. It was kind of a slideshow for me with puzzles. That's not a diss, of course, but.
Yeah. No, and the exposition of just, instead of having any dialogue, everything is explained through little thought bubbles, and you know the narrative is shown through that. And I think it's so much more effective when he runs into like these robot bullies who beat him up, and he has this little thought bubble of, you know, when he's a kid, and they pick him up and, you know, take his lunch money. You know, I think that's so much more effective than just, you know, actually reading through that or like having dialogue for that. And I think it will.
Yeah, or hiring a voice actor.
Yeah. Yeah, cheesy robot voice.
Okay, this is a big one. Dragon Age.
Eric, I know you've lost more of your life to that than I have to Torchlight.
Yeah, I'm about at... I've lost a little bit of track of Dragon Age. I have yet to beat it because of recent games, but... I'm about 47, 48 hours in, and that game is everything I've wanted since Baldur's Gate 2. It truly is. It's BioWare taking you back to classic BioWare. You're in a fantasy world that isn't afraid to be like, hey, I'm a fantasy world. I've got orcs. Well, basically orcs. I've got
That's
swords.
What it says.
I've got sorcery. It's a blast, you know? It's good to be back there. And really hard tactical combat to boot. Unless, yeah. Well, I think it's really hard. Some people are like, oh, you're a wimp, but no. I had a hard time with it.
It's tough. I mean, we were talking about this last week, I think, like the joy of somebody asked us a question about, you know, challenge in Dragon Age and how it was refreshing. And it's the joy of orchestration in that combat system for me, right? I mean, it's a good balance between, you know, seeing the real-time actions take place, you know, the blood and the gore and the spell effects and whatnot, but you know, pausing to think things over and sort of go through your mind, like, okay, I'm going to layer this effect and this defensive ability with this, and it's just the joy of being tactical and, you know, having cool fantasy chess pieces that you've developed for hours, and you know, and handpick the abilities of to play with,
and which are really versatile. I mean, just talking about like how we play with Morrigan, like it's completely different play styles and. It totally plays to that. You can customize everyone how you want to, and it's really cool. Definitely something I'll probably play through more than once, let alone just finish this run through.
Eric, I gotta ask. I mean, it's a game that you're very high on. You're 47 hours into it. Do you think it's too long for like one story? I mean, should they maybe have broken it up into two games? And I know it's you know, a bunch of people out there are going, what? Why would I pay? Why would it, you know, that's a terrible idea. Why should I break it up and pay for it twice? But
no.
Price aside.
I've had friends who have played through it in about 30 hours, I think is the fastest one of the people I know that have finished the game. Yeah, part of the reason I'm, you know, 48 and not that close to finishing is due to the way I play games. I'm a completionist, so I want to max out all my characters' levels and then head in and stomp everything. So, and it's a game that lends itself to that kind of play style that I adore. So, I don't know. I don't think it would have benefited from breaking. I don't think it should have gone much longer. It's at like that limit that it's perfect. It's just enough.
You knew it was coming. Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 2.
Guitar, gun. Awesome.
Michael Bay.
Michael Bay. Scribblers.
That's another one. Another one I just recently finished the single player campaign of. And I keep telling people that the reason it took me so long to finish it, you know, it's a short single player game. But the reason it took me so long to finish that is because I kept alt-tabbing out to find something more interesting. And the single player aspect of it just did not interest me at all.
I mean, that's what they do with their single player game is keep you captivated and on the edge of your seat, as they would say, the whole time.
Except not. Except, I mean,
not for Dan.
Except the character you're playing dies like four times, and it's like, that's the same gimmick they did in the last game.
And it's
like,
confusing as all get up.
They did it.
Well, it worked in the last one.
Yeah, it worked because you weren't expecting it. This time you're expecting it, and they deliver it over and over again. Also, the plot makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
No, the plot is back poop crazy.
Yeah. Right. But, so getting away from single player, my own personal cycle for the, that sounds strange, for the multiplayer was, oh my God, why am I playing this game? It was just basically me playing with Norm, cause we wanted to try it out and see what it was all about. And we're like, oh my God, why are people calling in these helicopters and Harriers that drop bombs? Why are people guided bombs over our heads and blowing us up? And like, why are people throwing, you know, shooting these dual shotguns at us and killing us instantly? And then I discovered a little thing called the grenade launcher. And I was like, oh, now I'm part of the, yeah, now I'm part of the problem. And I'm having a lot of fun. I'm just killing people instantly, getting, you know, triple kills.
But what you realize is there never was a problem. You were just doing it wrong.
I guess so. I wasn't playing the way it was intended.
I'm just kidding.
So now you're ruining, you're making those people's VM experience bad because they're being killed right and left.
Yeah, and they're swearing at me and they're using racial slurs and it's fantastic. I mean, I like I like proving to these people that
you
the game
threaten
is
to beat them up in real life
by being part of the problem.
Yeah, are you really that good at the noob tube,
dude?
Oh,
I get,
how can
I get,
you not be?
No. I mean,
I
Eric
suck
can attest
with the noob tube. Are you kidding?
Eric can attest to this a little bit. I get three to four to one KDs regularly with it easily.
Yeah. Top of the charts every time. Ever.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe like you're just 50, good though. Maybe you just have to realize that you're just skilled.
Well, that's fine. Yeah. But I mean, on the headquarters, I'll get 40 or 50 kills easily. I don't know. It's so easy because you know where people are, and it takes one shot of splash damage to kill them because you have a perk that increases your explosive damage. Anyway, what a bizarre game. I've stopped playing it because TF2 is great again.
Well,
you're not going to talk about the co-op.
I was going to say, it's worth mentioning Spec Ops, because that was kind of my redeeming. I spent a lot of time in the multiplayer, because I think more because like we were playing together. It's like, hey, let's hop in. But Spec Ops was a blast. I have no problems in saying, like, this part of Modern Warfare 2 I loved, because it was. They took the best, like, crazy, even cinematic moments from single player. They mixed it with, you know, good, solid gameplay.
Yeah, and there's no plot you have to worry about.
There's no plot. It's like, you know, you have an objective. That's it. It was a blast running through those.
Yeah, and you don't have to deal with IWNet. You don't have to deal with the matchmaking. Yeah, it was a blast. I don't know if we'll come back to it, but it was very enjoyable.
One of you guys is going to have to do some co-op with me, because I got to see what all the fuss is about.
Yeah, there's. Like, at least five missions that you absolutely have to play. Overwatch is one of them where it's, how do you describe it, Eric?
Well, the amazing thing about Overwatch is they completely unbalance it. Like, one person is a soldier just running to an objective. All you have to do is get to an objective, and there's tons of enemies. And the other player is up in the AC-130, sort of a la that mission from the original Modern Warfare, Call of Duty 4. And so basically, you've just, you know, the fun in it comes from the AC-130. You can see every target moving toward the other player, and you're just yelling and screaming like, move, now don't move, move, now don't move. And it's all about teamwork and cooperation, but it's not the same experience. It's a blast, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like I liken the person that's in the AC-130.
Hey!
Whoa, ladies and gentlemen, our master and overlord, Logan Decker.
I just came down the chimney. How is everybody?
it's like that moment in the Christmas special where like Bing Crosby comes in the front door.
Oh man, every Christmas special ever where everybody just comes at the door. Like we're talking.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I just barged in, but I just finished all my pages, so.
Yeah, Andy, can you insert like a little like clap track? Like applause. Yeah. Like Logan Tucker.
Logan, why do you smell like gin?
another Bing Crosby reference.
Did you see my holiday tip though? How brilliant was that?
Your what? My
holiday tip is that you bring booze to work, and then in the morning you spill it on your shirt, and you say out loud, you shout, you go, oh, I spilled booze on myself. Oh no. And then you can drink for the rest of the day and no one will know.
But then you're drinking in the morning and people think you're an alcoholic.
No, but no, you just like you opened it or like it spilled on the desk or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, and then it's on your clothes and then nobody realizes that you reek because you are still drinking. All
pro
day.
Tip.
That's a good tip. I've got almost as good as one.
Almost, yeah. Let's note that.
Okay. All right, we've got this hand sanitizer, like gel, that smells like gin. So you just rub some of that on your hands, and you're good to go.
You know
go.
What? That may actually be. I may have to concede.
And you're like, nope, it's the sanitizer. Just being safe.
Yeah.
Being
doesn't safe. It smell great? Doesn't it smell fantastic? And then they go, well, you put it in your mouth?
Or you could just lick your hands after you put them on, and it has the same effect.
Yeah. That's true. But really, it's throat sanitizer, you know? That you're, you know.
This is just sounding less sanitary as we go along.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to pop in to say hello to everybody, but also because I thought it would be really nice as kind of an end of a year thing to do something we've never done before. And I think it would be nice to sing a Christmas carol. Doesn't everybody else?
Absolutely. Mm. Which one, though?
Hello?
Which one?
Hey Dan, did you drop out? Hey Prentice, Eric, I think you all dropped out.
I am with you, fearless leader.
Jingle bells, Batman smells.
Wait, no, I think Dan got disconnected. Shoot.
Yeah, what does the Skype disconnect sound like? It's like pew
pew.
Come
on. It's like it's non-denominational. It doesn't. I mean, right? It doesn't have to be like that one with the manger and stuff. how about, okay, Jingle Bells. Everybody knows Jingle Bells, right?
Can I look up the lyrics to this really quickly?
What the?
You are not American.
No, you may not look up the lyrics. You know what? The man spends all day in a latex Batman cowl, you know, and this is what happens to him. It's like, he can't even remember the lyrics to Jingle Bells. Okay, so, 3, 2, 1. Jingle bells.
Oh,
stop.
Oh, it's horrible.
Stop. Stop.
The problem is, there's
okay,
Skype.
That wasn't Skype.
Yeah.
Okay, that bullshit that just happened.
Doesn't it start with dashing through the snow?
Oh.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. It's a good thing nobody looked up the lyrics. Right here.
I thought it's so easy. How can you not know, Logan?
Okay, you know what? That's really, this is not in the holiday spirit to pull that. Where like, oh, see? That was cold. Okay, go ahead and go.
I'm my voice is kind of.
Can you IM them to me too? Okay, I didn't know. Okay. Okay, so we'll start again.
Let's try it again.
And let's
how can you not
remember.
Know the lyrics?
I don't.
Okay, I just want to.
I don't think this could even work on Skype. I'm just saying.
Hey.
You know what? Of course, it's the magic of Christmas. It will happen. and I come on, put some. What do they call it? Singing from your diaphragm or whatever.
It's
not like the that thing, but you know the real diaphragm. Okay, 3, 2, 1. Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Please don't not do another three verses.
Second verse.
What's this bit about Fanny Bright?
I don't even know the second verse.
I know, but what is this?
Oh, making Fanny's bright.
A day or two.
I think I copied the wrong lyrics into it.
No, because when you're really cold and then you come inside, you get all red.
Who's Fanny Bright?
What is a slaying song?
A slaying song.
Like, well, not as in killing, but as in slay.
It's a song you sing whilst you slay.
No, these questions do not even begin to address what happened to your voices halfway through the stanza. I mean, is this
my voice went out.
It's like this.
It's called a verse.
I tried to be fortissimo.
You know what? If you guys were carolers outside my hospital room, I probably would have died. You know, I would have been so down.
Wouldn't that have made us a death panel?
Oh, good one.
Hey, yeah, I can't help it if bells and bobtails make me uncomfortable.
Hey, just another day in my neighborhood. Well, again, sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to say hi to everybody and thank you for joining us for this beautiful year. Have a wonderful holiday and we'll see you again after the break. Logs out.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Logan Decker, for distributing that wonderful element of Christmas cheer there. We were lacking.
And the gin.
And the gin as well. Excellent suggestions for how to show up drunk to work, courtesy of Logan Decker. All right. Only a couple more games here. So let's try and wrap this up. Left 4 Dead 2.
And why don't you lead on that one? Because that's your element.
That's my beat. Yeah.
I haven't played it yet.
Dude, come on.
Is it on sale right now? It might be on sale right now.
Well, I think we kind of universally agree that Scavenge Mode was the best addition to the game. You know, as people that kind of played the hell out of the first one, it's the best change to game mechanics that you're sort of used to, you know, getting from point A to point B. Instead of doing that, you're focused on, there are these really cool moments that emerge where you're relaying the gas cans or, you know, a zombie's trying to destroy one of the gas cans or knock them out of your hands, and you have to focus on those instead of, you know, necessarily the lives of your teammates.
Yeah, and I think for me, you really summed it up well in the review with the line, they introduce an element that supersedes survival.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you sort of have to like retrain your mind to let go of people a little bit more often. And I mean, from the infected side, it's really fun to just to be in that environment where you're orchestrating, like knocking them out of your hands, like being as the boomer, you're putting yourself in new situations where you're trying to get shot next to somebody that's carrying it. So they get swarmed and they can't pour it into the generator.
So let me clarify this, Evan, you prefer oil over people?
Always. Always.
Blood for oil.
Evil.
I don't know. It's just a really cool scoring system. I think in terms of what we might've been disappointed with, the new survivor characters didn't really resonate with me the same way Zoe and Francis and Bill and Lewis did for whatever reason. Maybe I haven't heard enough of their like lines enough. I don't know. They just didn't seem as memorable to me.
No, especially one will replace Nick, Zoe.
Nick is totally forgettable in that game. But they said allegedly like they recorded more lines in the first game. But I don't know. Either way. The melee weapons are great. In terms of technical stuff, the I don't know what we call it, the model destructibility or like the deformation on the zombies, right. The common infected is really, really fantastic. I'm hoping they expand that to the special infected with a further update.
And the new special infected make things much more interesting as well. And I don't think that any of them in particular is genius, but the fact that there are now seven forms of attack you have to look out for instead of just four. And that variety adds a lot to it.
Exactly. I mean, like it multiplies really. I mean, exactly what you just said. The threats that you have to deal with, right? If you think about what a boomer plus a smoker looks like versus a boomer plus a spitter, you know, it's a completely different set of tactics available to you. Two of the last games to be released this year on the PC, in fact, no, major releases at least, Dirt 2 and the Saboteur.
Saboteur was a lot of fun. You know, it had that unfortunate ATI problem, which hopefully is fixed now. I don't have an ATI, card in my machine to test it on, but they have a patch out now that will supposedly make it run on ATI machines. But yeah, just blowing stuff up. There's really something to be said for that. And, you know, a little over the top, like Indiana Jones style action. Yeah, very enjoyable.
Great. And partial nudity.
not partial. Well, I guess, yeah, it's part, yeah. And it's not, they're not completely naked, so, yeah.
You don't get to see the VGAs.
Oh my.
All right. Well, unless you guys can think of any major games that I missed.
Prototype.
Oh, thank you.
Basically, the reason I didn't get into Wolverine is because I was like, oh, Prototype beat me. I already played that first, and it was way more gratifying than anything Wolverine had to offer.
What about Red Faction Guerrilla?
That too. I like that game too a lot. It got really samey and I don't know the word. Like, it just felt stale near the end of the game. But there was a lot to play before that, and it was still really interesting to have the destructibility of the buildings like at your fingertips at any time.
I think Games Radar. I'm trying to think of the award they called out for Red Faction, but it was like the award for one feature saving the rest of a game. It was the destructibility kind of making up for all the repetition or
and whatever, like long travel times between.
Yeah. And with that, we're going to take a few of your questions now, and I'm hoping some of them are at least a few holiday themes. I could do with a little bit more Santa-based questions and things like that, so we'll see.
I just wanted to comment on your discussion about the Left 4 Dead 2 DLC. I think it's kind of crazy that people are so adamantly assuming that this will be for paid DLC on PC. The way I take that announcement at the end of their press release is, hey, we don't want to piss off 360 owners by telling the PC owners that they get it for free. I mean, their entire mantra with the TF2 DLC is that they get more sales from the base game every time they release free DLC. And I think that the same thing will hold true with Left 4 Dead 2. I hope I'm right and that you guys are wrong, but it would just be out of character. I mean, they released a new game in a year, and that was different, but nothing else they've done leads me to believe that they're going to start charging for a DLC on PC. Anyway, I'd like to hear your take. Bye. Thanks.
So, I mean, I remember talking about this last week and saying, well, if it is a four chapter campaign, if it does in fact include a new melee weapon, a new firearm, and a new uncommon, to me that sounds like money, right? I mean, that's a large piece of content, and I'm saying that with the idea that they will be releasing other smaller pieces of free content. Maybe a new special infected in the future, maybe smaller crash course size campaigns in the future, but that. If I were Valve, and I'm not, but I would be looking to set a new precedent for what paid content is in the Left 4 Dead universe now.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason that I suspect they might charge for it is because it does sound so ambitious. It's more than they put into the Crash Course DLC. So, if it's free, that's fantastic. I am not, going to expect it to be free, because if it is, then if it is not, then I will be pissed off. If it is, I will be pleasantly surprised.
I mean, if you're thinking about, okay, there's five campaigns in Left 4 Dead 2 right now. If you're thinking about adding another one, that's 20% of, roughly of the assets. I mean, obviously we're not accounting for modes and things like that, but you're generating, 20% of the same content in terms of levels and crescendo events and finales. And in addition to that, you're going to have the Left 4 Dead 1 survivors coming in there to, you know, interact in some way. It just sounds like an opportunity, especially since because they're saying this is releasing between the first and second campaign, that tells me they're going to be releasing more of these DLC pieces between the other campaigns.
This is Wes Mateka calling from small town Manitoba in Canada, and I just wanted to give some input on episode number 2 or 3 when you were talking about DLC and pirating. I'm a former pirater myself. When I turned 18, I decided to stop pirating for fear of getting caught, and now I buy all my games. And I gotta say that DLC didn't really influence me whether I wanted to buy a game or not. Although, I do have to agree with that it helped me decide whether I might actually want to buy a game or not. Like, sometimes games were really, really buggy, and I was like, oh, well, I'm glad I didn't spend $50 on that. But, no, I don't. It didn't really influence, even when I didn't pirate a game, hearing about DLC in a game, it meant nothing. And there are various reasons, and, oh, by the way, cracks do often work. You'd be very surprised. So, yeah, great show. I love the podcast, and I'll be subscribing to you.
He hit the wall, the one-minute wall.
Yeah, I think, you know, now, so he's talking about the bugs. I think one thing the DLC does promote is a sense that the game will be supported. For, you know, after release, every so often there's a game that they get thrown out there and just they never update it. So it's possible that, and like I would think that if they're saying we're going to put out DLC after this game comes out, to me that means okay, there's going to be patches to support the DLC as well, so they'll probably fix any issues.
Yeah, but I kind of agree with them though. Like if they're saying that this new game comes out and then they're announcing a DLC pack, like sort of how Dragon Age did it. I mean, I'm already going to play Dragon Age anyway, and I already bought it. I don't need to be influenced by, you know, promises of future dungeons.
Like, right, but
it's,
I mean,
it's got to be a great base game already.
Yeah, but the thing he was talking about was how that influences pirates.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining us this week for our holiday edition of the podcast. I guess that's what we're calling it now. We forgot to remind you guys last week, but we actually have a very exciting little piece of website, PCGamerTop100.com. So what we're doing is we're asking our readers and listeners and anybody that cares about PC games to offer up their 5 top games of all time. And we're going to compile that into a big old list, and we're going to print it in probably our April issue, Dan, I think.
I believe that's the plan.
So, we'll see. It's going to be printed as a feature in one of our issues, probably coming out in February. And we're going to see what the PC gaming community has to say about what the best games are of all time. And we'd really encourage you guys to sort of rally for your favorite games. I was excited to cast in a vote for Tribes and Team Fortress 2 there. So head on over to PCGamerTop100.com. You just have to submit your email address so you can register, and it's really simple. And while you're also finding last-minute gift ideas via Amazon and other websites, we encourage you to stop on over at PCGamer.com. Magazines make great gift ideas, I think. I love doing stuff in the mail, and we'd encourage you to share our magazine with your loved ones as well this holiday season. Let's get our playlist. And along with the playlist, I'd like to get your best gaming moment of 2009. Dan, you go first.
Winning the Street Fighter IV tournament in the office that I had no right to win.
Oh man, Zangief!
That was an upset.
Zangief, upset. That's who I play. Yeah. Wish I could have been there.
If I were to pick just one, that would be it. If I had to do another one, I'd say beating Valve at the last minute in Left 4 Dead 2 Scavenge.
Oh yeah, it was on the swamp level. I forget the name of it.
Yeah, it's another huge upset.
That was fantastic.
They were kicking us all over the place, and then we just stole one from the end.
Yeah. You, me, Norm, and Will Smith.
I found this little gem called Osmos. It's a little indie game. and I encourage you to check it out because it's just kind of relaxing. You play as like a bubble trying to absorb smaller bubbles and avoid bigger bubbles. It's pretty simple.
It's a very serene game.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of fun. Gaming moment of the year. When I think about gaming this year, what pops into my head is flying around in that AC-130 and yelling at Evan to get down and it spec ops in general. It really just made those moments for me.
Yeah.
Or getting to wave 20 in The Last Stand and then getting annihilated.
That was delightful. Prentice.
I just got Mirror's Edge off Steam for like $5 and I've been playing that today. And it's pretty good. I like it so far. But gaming moment of the year would probably have to be Kamikaze Missions and Arma and just, you know, flying with a helicopter with you, Evan, and just like bailing out over enemy lands and just getting shot in the air, stuff like that. Or rigging trucks with explosives and then driving them into their base and having somebody remotely blow it.
Yeah, we did do that, didn't we?
Yeah.
No, you didn't. It's all a lie.
Terrific. Andy Bauman, what you got for me?
I'm still working my way through Dragon Age slowly. I'm at like 20 hours, so I got a little bit of catching up to do to get to where Eric's at. But probably one of my moments of the year was in Prototype, just like going through my own strategies to take down a base through multiple helicopter hijackings without ever hitting the ground and using the arm to swing to each helicopter in midair and just grab them and take them over and cause some destruction, bail out, grab the next one, take over. So that was a pretty good moment of the year for me.
Nice. How many helicopters have you chained together?
Like 3 or 4 in a row. So pretty good.
As for myself, I've been putting a bunch of time into the TF2 update. I love the new maps. I don't know about you guys. Double Cross and Gorge. Double Cross is really an excellent capture the flag map. We don't really play 2-Fort or any other CTF map on our server, but people seem to be loving it. And Gorge is just a really fun 2-point capture map. Let's see. As for my gaming moments, well, we have to sort of tip our hat to our me, Dan, and Norm's victory at Demigod over not only the publisher but the developer of the game. That was fantastic. And I remember we were sort of nervous because we had no idea of, you know, what demigods they were going to use, how skilled they would be. So we trained like vigorously the night before and like draw up a little like tactical map of what we were going to do. And when we finally got to play them, we annihilated them completely. And it was just a really cool, memorable moment.
Brad Wardell at Stardock talked some smack, but he didn't back it up with actual smack.
Beat them at their own game. I mean, thoroughly. And I don't know, I have to call it one from Arma 2. And just to kind of like frame like how much I love the emergent moments that come out of Arma 2, I think it was actually the first time Dan or Will Smith played with us. And we're in this mission where like we had to drive up this hill and destroy this base. And we were on the ground. We had either gotten shot down or out of our copter. And Norm had a javelin.
Like I was there for this.
Yeah. And a javelin's like a surface-to-surface missile. It's lock-on. It's like it's actually very valuable within the game because you can almost always only carry one missile within your inventory. So that person is like basically use that to take out like a single tank that's like very threatening, and it's a guaranteed kill most of the time if you do it right. But most of it, like Dan and Norm and Will hadn't seen it fired before, so they didn't know how it worked or what the situation was. And I can't remember exactly how it came about, but Norm saw this truck, you know, like 300 meters away or something. And he established a bet with Will that if he could peg the truck with the missile at that range, or it might have been longer, further away, that Will would have to buy him lunch the next day. And Will was like, okay, let's do this. So Norm like lines up the shot, and there's all this like quiet tension as he sort of turns and goes into like a bent knee position, and the missile's over his shoulder. And I mean, there's even like a little bit more drama as he fires, because the way the javelin comes out,
doesn't it like shoot straight up?
Yeah. it does that, but like the tube itself just like shoots the missile out, so it's in the air, and then the booster activates, so it pops it out, and then it takes this like very parabolic arcing path to the target, and the target was like this pickup truck. I don't, it was kind of like an arbitrary like decision, and then shoots hundreds of feet up into the air. It was insane, the explosion, the cause, and I think we went to Subway the next day, and Norm got a foot-long sandwich.
He got the truck killer sandwich.
He did. It was delightful.
Did anyone ever tell Will that it was lock-on?
No. Absolutely not. Oh, and just one more. I'm going to share this one on behalf of Josh. When he found out that you could outrun the outrun the Abominable Snowman in Ski Free by holding F.
Wait, what? You can outrun the Abominable Snowman by holding F?
Yes.
Oh, Andy. We have much knowledge to share.
That's a pro tip if I ever heard one.
It is. And on that note, thanks for joining us for a year full of podcasts, guys. It's been an honor and a pleasure. And we'll look forward to 52 at least more episodes next year, hopefully.
I always skip one every now and then.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's all I promise, 48.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
Any more are bonus.
Absolutely. Well, have a safe and happy holidays. Game hard. Use this time to dump a bunch of hours into your favorite RPG or whatnot, and take care, and we'll see you next year.
I was playing Left 4 Dead the other day, and I think the map is called The Beach. Well, when I jump into the water, I die. Like, are you kidding me? When's the last time water killed you in a video game, okay. Mario? I think we should...
Yeah.
He's reading about Assassin's Creed there, isn't he?
And water did not kill you in Mario. There was, in fact, water levels.
The answer is Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, yeah.
GTA 3, but GTA 4 lets you...
Vice City 2.
Mm-hmm.
In San Andreas, you had to like build up your swimming by swimming in order to complete one mission.
We're
skipping this question anyway, right?
We'll put in the outtakes. Or something.
Yeah.
But, oh, okay.
And actually, Eric and I were talking about this at lunch. Like, speaking of like arbitrary limitations, like all of our co-op games are four players basically, right? Because of split screen.
Wait, what?
In most of our co-op games are four players because a screen happened to split that way, you know, since
GoldenEye.
That's
stuff.
Like, that's the most convenient way of dividing them. You know, why don't we have five or six player or four player or three player, I guess.
Well, you have three player co-op in Warhammer, in Dawn of War 2.
True.
And two player. But I think one of the reasons it doesn't go higher than that, because I mean you could do multiple or more co-op than that on consoles, even if you just have more consoles. But I think the reason they don't is because a team of more than four people starts to get unwieldy.